Today is the last day of our yatra. On the request of devotees, we have come to this place. It is a very unknown part of Vrindavan, this particular temple. It is not to be found in any of the parikrama books. We only are aware of these deities, Sri Sri Radha Gopi Jana Vallabha, due to the mercy they have personally bestowed upon myself. Yesterday, devotees had a vote, and by the democratic process, the conclusion was that we come here today. We understand Krishna by the grace of Krishna's devotees. We cannot approach Krishna directly. It is by his own sweet will that he has arranged it in this way. Krishna wants to give credit to his devotees. He wants to bestow his mercy through his devotees. It is only through the mercy of the Vaishnavas that we can understand what is Krishna, what is the holy name, what is Vrindavan, what is the purpose of life beyond just greed and egoism. I would like to briefly narrate a few personal encounters in my life in relationship to Sri Sri Radha Gopi Jana Vallabha, with your permission. In 1971, I was a devotee of Lord Shiva. I was traveling from the area of Pashupatinath to Amarnath for a pilgrimage in the month of August. Very crowded third-class train. Didn't sit down for about 40 hours. Finally, the train stopped, and I just wanted somehow or other to move. So I crawled over people's heads and somehow just pulled myself out the window just to breathe and to move, because I had these attachments. And the train started moving, and I tried to get back in, but it was so very crowded that no window could even fit a human being inside. Hey. This is demigods playing kettle drums. So the train left, and I was in this unknown place. I asked a sadhu on the railway platform, where is this? He said, this is Mathura. Today is Janmashtami. So he took me to Janmasthan, where I spent the whole day. It was very crowded and very joyful, although I really didn't know who is Krishna or what is Krishna so much. And then at midnight, everyone went to Dwarkadish temple and bathed in Vishram Ghat. So I was thinking, actually that night I stayed, although I was in Mathura, I stayed in the temple of Lord Shiva with a Babaji named Shivananda. And I was thinking I will go to Vrindavan for about 3 days, then I will go to Amarnath. So I started walking down the road, and a bus saw me on the road, and between Vrindavan and Mathura, just near field, in fields, and just stopped and picked me up, said I didn't have to pay anything. So I went on the bus, and then I arrived, and I just asked someone, is there a river here? Jamuna, because I knew there was Jamuna. So they pointed, so I was just walking toward Jamuna. Because that was my tradition. Where at whatever holy place, I would just go to whatever holy river was there and just sleep under a tree and do meditation. So as I was walking, one Vrijavasi approached me and said to me, oh, you have come from foreign land, because foreigners were very rare at that time. There was no ISKCON here at that time. He said, you have come to Krishna's home, and we are Krishna's family. You are our guest. Let me give you some food. So he took me to some Vrijavasi's house and had prasad, nice prasad. And then he said, where are you staying? I said, on the river. He said, no, he took me to an ashram of one blind sadhu. And I met him and he said, let him stay here. He said, yes. But still I went to the Jamuna. So on the third day, when I was going to leave in the morning for Mathura to the railway station, I woke up with typhoid fever. So I was very, very sick. And some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers were very kind to me. And after I was in this Ramakrishna Charitable Hospital for about 2 weeks, laying in a room with 40 dying people, they gave me shelter in one Gaudiya Math for some time. And I was studying there. The doctor told me I had to wait at least 2 months before I could travel, or I would die, because my body was so weak and emaciated from the way I was living. By the end of the 2 weeks, within 2 months, I came to the conclusion that of all the theologies, philosophies, religions, and spiritual paths that I have experienced, there is nothing higher, there is nothing sweeter, there's nothing more beautiful than the religion of Vrindavan, devotion to Sri Sri Radharani and Lord Krishna. So I decided to spend the rest of my life in Vrindavan and never leave. So after some time, I was living on Bank of Jamuna, sometimes going to Gopherdham, Nandagaon, Barasana, and various places. I would usually sleep under trees near Chirgat here in Vrindavan. We would go to Mangal Arati whenever in Vrindavan at Radharaman Temple, and then Radha Vallabh Temple, then go to a Mangal Arati in Sevakunj, and Banki Bihari gets up quite late. Sometimes to Radha Damodar Temple. So what happened is some sadhu, one very nice sadhu, he got to know me. I would go every night, he, a few sadhus, and myself, we would go around Vrindavan, Vrindavan Parikrama. We did this every night for the whole month of Kartik. We would just sing bhajans on the bank of Jamuna. One of the sadhus was a musical godbrother of Ravi Shankar. He played sitar. But he considered Ravi Shankar to be somewhat in Maya because he played ragas without Krishna's names. He would play ragas and only chant Krishna's names when he played. So we'd sit. He was a fantastic sitar player. We would sit on bank of Jamuna and just chant, and he would play, just about 3, 4, 5 of us. And then we would go around Vrindavan every night in the moonlight, when there was a moon. And one of these nice sadhus told me, I want you to meet a very, very, very simple and pure soul. When you meet him, he will really, you will understand what is bhakti. So I thought he was going to bring me to some nice temple. He took me in the Radha Vallabha temple area, down this very isolated little alleyway where there was an open sewer gutter just flowing like anything, black sewage. And had to step over that sewage gutter to get in the door. And it was someone's house. Very, very simple house. Small house. And a family was living in that house. And they're always making noises and everything. And in a hallway, in one of the hallways of their house, there was a closet. Family was always passing, walking through that hallway, kind of an open hallway. And in that closet were the deities of Sri Sri Radha Gopi Jana Vallabha. And then he introduced me to the pujari. His name was Ghanashyam. And how gracious and how kind he was. He had such pure love and devotion to the deities. I was told that many years before, when he was a young man, he came from a very wealthy family. His father, mother, all the family members, they came on a pilgrimage to Vrindavan. They spent a few days, and what the Dham of Vrindavan did to his heart was something wonderful. He became so deeply attached to Vrindavan. Just by being here, he became
completely detached from everything in life. He saw no other purpose or meaning to existence except surrendering to Sri Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So when it was time to go, he said, "I will stay here. I will not leave." So his parents thought, "This is ridiculous. Not leave." So they said, "All right, you come a little later." So they went back. The parents came back again and said, "Now you must come." He said, "No, I will not leave here." So they told him, We will take away all your property, all your money, everything, unless you come back. We will not in any way support your being here." He considered the only real treasure and wealth in life his residence in Vrindavan, in the service of Radha and Krishna. So they left. From a very wealthy family, he was in total poverty. In the summer, which is very hot, in the winter, which is extremely cold, he would just sleep in the dust of Vrindavan, on the ground, in various places. He would go and do some madhukari and get some roti. At that time, Vrindavan was a very, very quiet place. He hardly knew anyone. He would just be immersed in chanting the holy names and praying. One day, he was just sitting in the dust all day long, just chanting the holy names. And you know what his deity was? The name of Radharani. In the Sanskrit alphabet, he just wrote Sri Radha in the dust with his finger, and he would just worship that. And then at the end of the day, he would erase it so that nobody would step on it. So when he erased, he saw some gold. He rubbed the ground and he felt something there, and he started digging in a little, and there was a piece of gold. So he was thinking, "What is this?" So he dug into the ground, and what he found was something extraordinary. It was the top of the head of Srimati Radharani's deity. And next to her, underground, was a beautiful blackish deity of Lord Krishna. And it was written underneath him, Radha Gopi Janabhava. So he had these deities. These deities you see, they're quite big deities. He had absolutely not one paisa. He only had one torn up set of clothes. He had no residence. And here is self-manifesting deities of Radha Gopi Janabhava. So he felt that they have somehow put themselves under my care. I cannot leave them. So he would just sit there with them and just chant. And sometimes people would come by and give some madhukari. He couldn't go to homes because he can't just leave the deities in a field. He was worshipping them literally under a tree, even in the rainy season. Just under a tree. And people would sometimes come by and give some roti and he would offer it. This went on for some time. And this particular family of Vrijavasis, they saw his genuine and sincere devotion. So they said, you can put your deities in the closet of our house, near our hallway. Those deities remained there for about the next 50 years, and he worshipped them there. This is where we met him. He would never leave the deities. He would just only one time of the day, he would go to the Jamuna, because he had no one to help him. He would go to the Jamuna to collect water, to bring back to, he would bathe in Jamuna and then bring a bucket of water back to bathe the deities. Now, when I met him, he was an old man, perhaps in his 80s. And he had a certain mood about him. It was that he was the most fallen, insignificant servant of Gopijana Ballava, most unqualified, and that anyone who came to that temple, and oh, very few people ever came, but anybody who would come into that little temple, he would consider that that was Gopijana Ballava's very special guest, Gopijana Ballava's friend that was personally invited. And he would give his life, his soul, his everything to serve anybody who came. He was one of the simplest people I ever met. He was really living in poverty. You know where he slept for that 50 or 60 years? He slept in the hallway. Where people would just, the family would just walk by, practically stepping over him. He didn't even, the deities were in a tiny little closet. Near that closet was a much tinier closet, where just whatever the deity's belongings were was in there. And he just slept in the hallway, on the floor. So I started coming there at about 9 o'clock every morning. After about 5 different Mangalartis that I would attend, I would go to Gopijana Ballava temple. Follow the temple. And one day, I just went there because I wanted to just be with Ganeshan. So one day he told me, come today at noon and I will give you prasad. So I was thinking, how can I refuse this? So I came at noon and he gave me all he had was 3 rotis, nothing else. 3 rotis, Raj rotis. So he said, you come every day. You must come. He said, you must come every day. Gopijana Ballava and Radharani want you to come every day to take prasad with them. So after about 3 days, this one sadhu that brought me to his house, he told me, do you know that Ganeshan has not eaten anything for 4 days? I said, why? He said, because you're eating all his rotis. He said, Ganeshan doesn't go out to beg, really. He can't go far. One house, there's 3 little houses right in that area. Each one cook 1 roti. And he goes to those 3 houses every day to get 1 roti from each house, and he brings it. That's all he has. He offers them to Gopijana Ballava. So he said, he's given you all of his food. So I came the next day, and he just put down the rotis in front of me. And I said, "Ghanasham, these are your rotis." He says, no, these are your rotis." I said, I already had prasad." He said, "Doesn't matter. Gopijana Vallabha wants you to eat these rotis." I said, no, I don't want these rotis." He says, you must. He spoke nice English because he was coming from an educated family. I said, "Ghanasham, I have been told that you haven't eaten in 4 days because I'm eating all of your prasad." He said, "No! Who has told you this? This is not true. I am eating so much. Gopijana Vallabha is giving me everything I need. Now you eat these rotis. Please." I said, "Ghanasham, I'm not going to eat these rotis because they're your rotis." Literally, he began to weep and tremble with folded palms, begging me to eat the rotis. I said, "Ghanasham, unless you show me that there's more rotis in your house, I'm not going to eat these." He said, "I have so many rotis in this house." He said, "Gopijana Vallabha is... his consort is Sri Radharani. She is the supreme goddess of fortune. You don't think there's any rotis in her house?" I said, "Ghanasham, show me the rotis." He said, "No need to show you. No need. They are here. You just take this prasad." He became so concerned. I said, "Ghanasham, I know that there are 12 places in Vrindavan that give madhukari to sadhus at a particular time of the day. In those days, every sadhu knew where to go at what time to get free rotis." That was the first thing sadhus learn when they come to Vrindavan, what the time schedule of roti distribution is in different temples. So I said, "I can go anywhere. You're here. You're starving." He said, "No need. You take these rotis." He started crying and pleading and praying to me. I understood if I didn't eat his rotis, I would break his heart. So I was praying to Gopijana Vallabha, "What should I do? Break his heart or starve his body?" He would not let me leave without eating the rotis. But I never came back at 12 o'clock. He would always be inviting me. The next day, he didn't eat the rotis at 12 o'clock. He saved them, knowing that I would come at 9 o'clock the next day. But we had a big fight. And I refused to eat his rotis. This was his selfless service attitude. He was so old and so thin. One day I saw him walking with this bucket of water to bathe Gopijana Vallabha. And from the Jamuna, he would walk about 3 steps, then he'd have to put it down and rest. Then he'd pick it up strenuously, 3 steps, put it down and rest. At the time, I was only 20 years old. So I took the bucket from him. I said, "I will carry it to the temple." He would not let go. He said, no need. I said, "Ghanasham, let me carry it for you. I can carry it in 3 minutes. It takes you half hour. I'm young." He said, "Yes, you are young, so you should enjoy." "But I am old man. I am just the servant. My life is sacrifice." He said, "You are Gopijana Vallabha's friend. You should not have to work for him. But I am just his fallen servant. It is my duty to serve him." he would not give me that bucket. I was walking alongside of him for about 20 minutes, and we were having tug of wars. He would not give me the bucket. And then finally, he began to cry. And with a choked up voice, he said, "This service I have to Gopi Janavallabha is all I have in life. Please, please do not take it away from me." I never tried to take that bucket away from him again. One day, I happened to be there, and it was some festival. So some Brijabasi brought him a cup of sweet rice to offer to Gopi Janavallabha. Now please, don't imitate the spontaneous love of the Brijabasis or the residents of Vrindavan. But you can hear to understand its nature. He was just eating 2-3 rotis a day for how many years? And here was a small pot of sweet rice in a clay cup that was brought. The way he offered it to the deities is he sat me down in the little hallway in front of the closet. He put the spoon, one spoon, in the cup and put it right to Gopi Janavallabha's mouth and said a little prayer. Then he put it to Sri Radharani's mouth and said a little prayer. Then he came to me, because it's only a few feet from the deities and where I was sitting. He came to me and told me, "Open your mouth and put your head back." And I opened my mouth and put my head back, and he just poured the sweet rice from the spoon in my mouth. And this is how he offered the entire pot of sweet rice. He just kept doing it, spoon by spoon. Gopi Janavallabha's mouth, Sri Radharani's mouth, then he just tossed it in my mouth. I said, "Ganesham, save some for yourself." He said, "No need, no need." And then with folded palms and tears in his eyes, he said, "You are Gopi Janavallabha's friend. You are Gopi Janavallabha's friend. I am only his insignificant servant." One time in the month of January, I happened to come by to visit him in the nighttime. So, Ganesham and I were chanting together. Whenever I went, I would come at all different times of the day sometimes, just to visit him. And whenever I would come, he was never idle. He was never sitting or sleeping. He was always doing seva. I'd come and he'd be fanning the deities. He'd just be standing there fanning and singing songs. Another time I'd come and he had some sandalwood pulp and he would just be putting chandan, grinding it. But most of the time, 90% of the times when I'd come, he'd just be sitting alone with harmonium and just singing beautiful songs for Gopi Janavallabha. He was always busy doing some seva, little seva. Sometimes he would be puja, doing offerings and aartis. Sometimes he would be dressing them. So this night I came and we were singing nice kirtan together in this old, broken-down little house in a hallway. So then I said, "I'm going, now I must go." And Ganesham said, "Where are you going?" I said, I'm going to take rest. He said, where do you take rest? I said, I always take rest on the bank of Jamuna. He said, no, it is January, it is very cold. And you have no home, and you have no clothes, proper clothes, you have no blanket even. He said, you stay here tonight. It is too cold. I insist, you must sleep here tonight. So I said, Ganesham, I sleep on Jamuna every night. He said, no, tonight you must stay here. Gopi Jana Balaba, you are his guest, you must sleep nicely. So I lay down on the floor next to him, and he came out with this old blanket and put it on top of me. So I was thinking, this is very nice, a blanket. And then he laid next to me. All he had is just a thin dhoti and little chadar. Not even a pillow. He just slept right on the bare floor. He just had a little piece of burlap he would put on the floor, and he would lay on his arm. And he was trembling cold. I said, Ganesham, this is your blanket. You sleep with your blanket. He said, no, it is not my blanket. It is your blanket. He said, Gopi Janabalaba wants you to have this blanket. You are his friend. I am only his fallen servant. You must accept this blanket. I said, no, it is your blanket. I will only stay here if you sleep with the blanket. So he was begging me, again, weeping, begging me, take the blanket, sleep nicely. He said, I am an old, useless servant. What difference does it make if I suffer? But you are dear to the Lord. You must enjoy. This was his mood. He was worshiping the deities for 50, 60 years. And I'm just a new devotee. I just arrived in Vrindavan and understood who Krishna is a couple months before. So finally, he surrendered. Because I was about to walk out. I said, if you don't take this blanket, I'm leaving for the Jamuna. He said, all right. I will sleep in the blanket. No, you lay down. So I lay down. And it was cold. I was laying. Ganesham was under this old, tattered blanket, but it was a little warm. So sometime later, I woke up at night, middle of the night, and mysteriously I was feeling a little warm. So I looked over at Ganesham, and he's just laying there, trembling like a leaf in the wind. And then I looked at myself and I saw the blanket was on me. While I was sleeping, he put the blanket on me. So very, very quietly, I picked up the blanket and I wanted to not wake him. As soon as I touched his body with the blanket, he just leaped up. No need! I said, Ganesham, you're not even sleeping. You're freezing. He said, no need! You are Gopi Janabalaba's friend. I am his servant. The duty of the servant is to serve the friend. Gopi Janabalaba will never be pleased with me unless I sacrifice my life for the happiness of his guests. In his devotees, you must accept this blanket. He said, you keep this blanket. You take it with you. I refused. So then I wasn't yelling, but I was just, no, I'm not going to sleep in this blanket. And he was insisting. Finally, I said, I'm going to the Jamuna. He said, all right, I will sleep with the blanket. So I lay down, and he lay down. And I woke up a few minutes later, and I was warm. And I looked over, and there he was, suffering miserably, freezing and trembling. So again, I tried to really, really
secretly put that as soon as I touched him with the blanket, he, no need, no need, no need.
He said, my life is to serve. He said, you don't understand. My happiness is to serve. My only function in life is to serve. Whether I suffer or whether I enjoy means nothing. The only meaning is Gopijana Ballabha and Radharani happy with me? They are happy when I give everything I have to their devotees. He was so sincere. I would not accept at least 5 or 6 times that night this happened, of the switching of blankets. I never came back there at night. In the winter. But then when it started getting warmer, I started going there sometimes at night. And he was aging. It was so nice. Somehow or other, he had made this little bed for the deities. And you see the size of these deities. He would, every night, whenever possible, he would put the deities in the bed and lay them down and massage their feet and put a little blanket over them. And then he would sing for them for hours while they were sleeping. But because he did this for many, many years. But in his old age, he could not lift the deities to put them in the bed. So any time I would come at night, he would ask me, please, please help me put Radharani and Gopijana Ballabha in their bed. I wasn't initiated. At that time, I didn't even have a spiritual master. What to speak of being a Brahmin? But he would have me lift, because the feet are lighter. He would take the side of Gopijana Ballabha's feet, and I would take his shoulders, and we would carry Gopijana Ballabha and lay him in bed, and then take Sri Radharani and lay her in bed. And he was so happy. He would just be crying in joy that Gopijana Ballabha and Radharani tonight get to sleep in their bed again. He would never ask me, please come every night and help me. If I happened to come at night, he would very humbly appeal, will you put Gopijana Ballabha in their bed? Otherwise, he would put them to rest standing up. And how much he was so happy, I could see. It was like the most glorious festival. It was like the most glorious feast to his heart to see the deities laying nicely in a bed to take rest. One day I came in the morning and I told Ghanasyam that I am going to Barasana. He started to cry. He was so dedicated to those deities. As far as I know, although he was living in Braj Bhumi, since he was about 19, 18 years old, he came. This time, he was there about 60 years. He was here about 60 years. As far as I know, he had never gone to Barsana. He had never gone to Nandagaon. He had never even seen Govardhan Hill, because he felt so duty-bound to his deities, he would never leave them. When I told him I was going to Barsana, he began to cry. And with folded hands, he said, when you go to Shriji Mandir, please tell Sri Radharani that Ghanashyam is longing to come there to see her. But that I cannot come because I am only her servant. And I cannot leave my service. Another time I was going to Govardhan Hill. I said, I'm going for Govardhan Parikrama. Ghanashyam again began to cry. He said, when you see Giriraj, tell him that Ghanashyam has been worshipping him and praying to him for many years and is longing to see him. He was seeing Barsana. He was seeing Govardhan. Much clearer than so many thousands of pilgrims that walk around on parikrama of these places. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught us, do not try to see Krishna. Sigh to serve Krishna in such a way that he will be pleased to see you. When I heard this statement of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sometime later, the remembrance of Ghanashyam came very intimately into my heart. He truly lived by the principle of servant, of the servant, of the servant. It was actually in that little closet temple that I was with Ghanashyam and about two or three other old sadhus that would come to meet him in the mornings. And I had to leave India because my visa had expired. So they gave me two suggestions in the presence of Gopijana Balabha. One suggestion is, if you have to leave India, go to Mithila, Janakpur. It is the Barsana of Ram's Leela. And it's in Nepal, so it's out of India. So I went there. I was in Nepal for about a month or something, and then my Nepalese visa expired. And I only had a 2-week transit visa in India, just to go through, and then I had to depart. So from Pashupatinath, I went to Ayodhya and Prayag, and then I came to Vrindavan. I spent about 10 days in Vrindavan. My last day I did Govardhan Parikrama and then departed. But the day before that Govardhan Parikrama, I visited Ghanshyam Baba. And he and a couple others were saying, if you have to leave Vrindavan, because I was crying, I have to leave Vrindavan. They said, if you have to leave Vrindavan, you should go to New Vrindavan. I asked, what is this New Vrindavan? They said, Swami Prabhupada. So when he was here in Vrindavan, you went to see, because I had already accepted Prabhupada as my guru by that time in Vrindavan. He said, your Guru Maharaj, Swami Prabhupada, he was telling us that he has created a Vrindavan in America called New Vrindavan, and he told us that it's not different than Vrindavan. So you should go there. That way you'll never leave Vrindavan until you can come back. And he even told me, he said, you should be pujari when you go there. So I had to leave. And I went to Amsterdam. And that was the first ISKCON temple I ever saw. I would live with Prabhupada when he came to Vrindavan. I was with Prabhupada in Bombay for some time before. But I never saw an ISKCON temple. And the whole, except for about 10 days when Prabhupada was doing parikrama in Vrindavan, there was never any ISKCON devotees here. So, then I went to the temple in London on Bury Place and stayed for some time. And then I visited my parents because they were severely heartbroken by my spirit of attempted renunciation. So I visited them for some time, and then I got the news Prabhupada was coming to New York. So immediately I hitchhiked to New York, and I was with Prabhupada for about a week there. And the day he was leaving, there was an announcement that Prabhupada is coming to New Vrindavan. And he's going to give a 7 days lecture series on Srimad Bhagavatam. It is going to be called the Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. And he's going to celebrate Janmashtami there and Vyas Puja. And we need people to help prepare for the festival, because devotees from all over the country are going to be coming. So whoever can come, please come and help to serve Prabhupada there and be there for his festival. So when I heard that, I was thinking, in Gopijanaballabha temple, I was told that I should go to New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada's going to be there. So I went to New Vrindavan. And my intention was only one thing, just to stay there till 6 months expire, then I can get a visa to come back to Vrindavan, India. That was my only intention. But when Prabhupada came and I heard him preach, I realized that we really see Vrindavan through serving the spiritual master, through serving the Supreme Lord. As long as we have any selfishness in our heart, Vishayacha diyakabe sudahabhimana, Narottam Das Thakur, as long as we have any material desires in our hearts, we can't really see what is Vrindavan. So by Prabhupada's mercy, he inspired me that you should just surrender to your service where you are. You are here now, just surrender to your service. Surrender to serving, helping me in my mission. So I was in charge of milking cows and doing some other simple work. And then the pujari of the brahmachari ashram got married. That happens sometimes. I was such a simple new devotee. I was thinking, how is it possible? He's serving Radha Vrindavan Nath. He's a personal. He's bathing Radha Vrindavan Nath. He's dressing them. He's feeding them. why in the world would anyone who has such a wonderful service want to get married? Inconceivable. So I went to that devotee. I said, if you want female association, come and help me milk cows. The safest way to associate with the opposite sex. Somehow or other, he didn't accept my advice. And so he got married. Then the temple president said, you should be the pujari. I said, well, who's going to take care of the cows? He said, you do both. So I was pujari for Radha Vrindavanath. And I remember one day, I was putting the dress on Srimati Radharani. And something wonderful happened. I remembered then that Ghanashyam Baba told me that I should be the pujari at New Vrindavan. So for 11 years, I was not allowed to come to India. Because in those days, devotees were really in a sense of surrender, and they were very duty-bound in the way they rendered their service. We would never, ever, ever act outside of authority or blessings. So for 11 years, I remained there, worshipping the deities. And after I was given sannyas. Actually, I didn't want to take sannyas. But the leader of New Vrindavan, Kirtanananda Maharaj, I would be always talking about Vrindavan. I'd be telling, because in those days, nobody had ever been to India, except a few devotees. When I was in London in Berry Place, I had this old, thin, one of those wool gray chatters, but it was really an old one. Some sadhu wore it for years and gave it to me. And I had it on when I was in London. And the devotees in Berry Place were gathering around me. Because they said, that's just like Prabhupada's chatter. They had never seen a chatter except on Srila Prabhupada. And me, they were saying, where did you get that? That's just like Prabhupada's chatter. We have never seen any. So I said, Sadhu gave it to me in Vrindavan. Vrindavan, you have been to Vrindavan. People would be very interested to know what is Vrindavan. We read about it in Krishna book, but what is it like today? So when I came to New Vrindavan, only the leader had been to Vrindavan. Nobody else had ever been. So everyone would want to know about Vrindavan. And after I would tell them, everyone wanted to go. Kirtanananda Maharaj made an work. He made a rule that I was not allowed to speak about Vrindavan. Well, that rule was very, very difficult to follow. Sometimes devotees would come way up to that old mountain farmhouse where the temple was of Radha Vrindavanath, and it would just be me and them. It would be after the offerings and the aartis. And between, they'd say, tell me about Vrindavan. And I'd start telling them about the places of Govardhan and the places of Vrindavan and the places of Nandagaon.
Bhadrasana, start telling them about Brijabasis, and start telling them about different sadhus I would know here, and telling them about my meetings with Prabhupada here. And then they'd start telling everybody. And the temple president would say, because I was a brahmachari, they'd say, Radhanath is in Maya. They said, he wakes up at 1 in the morning and chants all rounds and works all day. Why is he in Maya? Because he's talking about Vrindavan. Then he'd come all the way up. I told you not to talk about Vrindavan. You're agitating the community. One day he said, Prabhupada said New Vrindavan is not different than Vrindavan, so you just talk about New Vrindavan. So when he was trying to convince me, and he would say, I will never ever in your life let you go back to Vrindavan, because I know if you go, you'll never come back. So he was trying to convince me to take sannyas in 1982. And I was refusing. He was pushing and pressurizing, and he had the whole community on a he preached to the whole community to not give me any peace of mind till I took sannyas. So everyone would be harassing me. So finally he said to me, if you take sannyas, I'll let you visit Vrindavan. But I still refused. Finally, it was too much. I had to surrender. And after I surrendered, I decided I want to be unconditional. I knew I had to do it anyway. I said, well, but I still get to go to Vrindavan. So 11 years later, 1983, I returned to Vrindavan. First time. I remember I came to Gaur Purnima, the first time I ever went to Gaur Purnima festival in Mayapur, 83. Because when I was living in India, I don't even think they had the land in Mayapur yet. So then I took a train from Calcutta to Delhi, and I took the Taj Express to Mathura. And I decided to go according to my old tradition. I went to Vishramghat, took bath, and then walked along the Jamuna from Mathura to Vrindavan. But things really changed at that time. There was a lot of obstructions in that walk if you tried to do it today. So I came to Vrindavan. And I'll never forget. This is 11 years later. You know, at Radhavallabha temple, there's the old temple and there's the new temple where the deities were at. Well, that old temple is right very close to Ghanasyam Baba's house. So I came and I happened to see Ghanasyam sitting on the steps outside the old temple. And now he was 11 years older. He was in his late 80s or 90s. I don't know. And he looked at me. When I lived in Vrindavan, I wore these simple white lungi that was kind of torn up, and I had a little chadar, and I had long matted hair, and I never shaved. Because I was young, it didn't make that much difference, but I never shaved. And now here I am, a sannyasi with a danda, with shaved head. So he was looking at me, and he was old, he was just looking at me. Because one great sadhu living in Vrindavan had given me when I was living here the name Ratin Krishnadas. I never got initiated, but he gave it out of affection. So Ghanasham always called me Ratin. That means Krishna, the chariot driver of Arjuna. So he looked at me, and he was just looking. And I bowed down to him. And I got up, and he was just looking. And then he said, like a father to a long-lost son, he said, Ratin. And then he started to weep. He started to cry, and he embraced me. And he said, Radha Gopijana Vallabha has been waiting so long to see you. And he took me by the hand and brought me into that same little hallway where the closet was. And he started taking off the jewelry of the deities and giving it to me. Saying, Radharani wants. Radharani wants you to have this. He's giving me rotis. And I came that night from Krishna Balaram temple, secretly. I secretly left Krishna Balaram temple that night to help him put Gopijana Vallabha into the bed. 11 years later. I even brought a couple god brothers to the temple. And he was just taking off. He was just giving them whatever he could give them, he would give them. Bow down to each Vaishnava. Then the next time I came, to the door and I walked in. And I walked into that little temple. There was no Gopijana Vallabha. There was no Ghanasham. So I asked the family members, Ghanasham, Ghanasham. And the person just, with tears in their eyes, smiling, he said, Goloka. He had he was so old. But he knew that if he were to die, there'd be nobody to take care of the deities. Because that family had nothing to do with the deity worship. They were just working people and like that. So even though he was really aged and in poor health, he just lived to take care of the deities. So my understanding, because for many years I was asking people, where is Gopijana Vallabha? Nobody knew. Even that family didn't know. Then I met one very dear brother and friend named Asim Krishnadas Prabhu, who during the time I lived in Vrindavan, we would go together to see Ghanasham Baba. And he told me that the temple, what he told me is this, that Ghanasham Baba
was just living because there was no one else to do the seva of the deities. But then one trust built this temple. But they had no deity. So they were looking for a deity to put in the temple. So someone told them that there's this beautiful self-manifested deity just in a closet. So they asked him, and he was so happy. After 60 years in this closet, Gopijana Ballabha, maybe 70 years in this closet, Gopijana Ballabha will finally have a temple. So he came here when the temple was built. And he was, it's somebody else's temple, somebody else's trust, but he was just the pujari. And very, very soon after, because the trust would supply another pujari, as soon as he saw that Gopijana Ballabha had a house, and he trained some other pujari, someone would take care of him, as soon as he saw that the deity seva would be taken nicely, he gave up his body. A young person will serve the deity better than me. So he had no reason to remain in this world. When we read about the qualities of selfless service, when we read about the principle of servant of the servant of the servant, when we contemplate actual humility of the heart, Sri Gopijana Ballabha empowered him to be a very wonderful, wonderful example of that. But only a few people in the whole world ever saw him or knew him. He was just totally an unknown person. But his life and soul, his prayer, where the people would just come to see the deities. Probably no more than 6 or 7 different people a month would come to see his deities. But anybody who came, it would be the joy of his life to serve Gopijana Ballabha's friend, his special invited guest. I think today Ghanashyam Baba is very happy that all of you have come to see the beautiful forms of his beloved Lord. And what a mystery life is. But at the time, I was just insignificant little beggar sleeping on Bank of Jamuna. And I've been given the wonderful fortune of now bringing helping to bring 1,000 devotees for the darshan of Gopijana Pallava. Our beloved Srila Prabhupada was truly the embodiment of selfless service. Please forgive me. Srila Prabhupada left Vrindavan. He left his beloved Radha Damodar. He suffered heart attacks, strokes, poverty, seasickness, persecution, to give us Krishna. Srila Prabhupada told us, he saw us as the representatives of his Guru Maharaj. And how he served and gave his life to give us Krishna. It is by Srila Prabhupada's selfless compassion that my insignificant self has been spiritually sustained and nourished to whatever extent there is year after year. It is by his selfless service attitude based on pure love that is sustaining all of our spiritual lives. And actually it's Srila Prabhupada. His act of such humble devotion even to wretched, materialistic people that has brought all of us to Vrindavan. It is actually Srila Prabhupada who has fulfilled the spiritual desires of millions of people throughout the world. And even it is Srila Prabhupada who has actually fulfilled Ghanashyam Baba's great desire that thousands of sincere souls will come to take the blessings of his beloved Lord. So we should know with great faith and conviction that His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the ultimate manifestation of the highest teachings of the Vaishnava scriptures, has given us everything. He has given us everything. He has given us the complete, unadulterated mercy of the Parampara. And what is he stressing? He puts such great, great emphasis on the spirit of service. Throughout his lectures, throughout his books, and manifested by his life, how much emphasis he has put on developing a proper service attitude. What is a service attitude? Service doesn't simply mean doing something for someone else. That is a very superficial understanding. But real service is selfless, unconditional, uninterrupted by various obstacles that may come in our path. Ghanashyam Baba longed to go to visit Barsana, Govardhan, Mahavan. But there was no consideration because his service was to his Lord. Srila Prabhupada could have been living here in Vrindavan happily. He probably would have lived to over 100 years old. But he sacrificed his health. He sacrificed the peace of mind of the holy Dham. He sacrificed everything selflessly to give you the opportunity to love Krishna. Mahajana yena gata sapanta. Prabhupada taught us this principle and lived by this principle. It is the principle we read on every page of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Unconditional, selfless service. It is the principle that is broadcasted throughout the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first verse to the last. Unconditional devotional service. Without ego. What is the pleasure of the Lord? What is the pleasure of his devotees? What is my duty to him? Prabhupada knows. The will of the Lord comes through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. His Guru told him to spread the holy names all over the world. It became his life and soul. Doesn't matter. What obstacles, what inconvenience. Doesn't matter whether it brings life or death. Because he had that selfless, humble attitude of service, all of us have been saved. The doors to the spiritual world of Goloka have been opened to millions and millions and millions of people. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi hishnana amanana manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us to string this verse on the thread of the holy name and to wear it always. It is our life. We can evaluate how we are successful by how we are pleasing Krishna. And we can evaluate how we are pleasing Krishna by studying our hearts, our intentions, and our words and actions in relationship to this teaching. Trinadapi sunichena taror ivase hishena amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like the straw in the street, tolerant like tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. If we live by this verse, then we can actually follow Prabhupada's teachings and broadcast the glories of the holy name always. Today is the last day of our yatra. This is the last meeting we will all have together. The purpose of this yatra is not sightseeing, not just to come to a holy place and get sick and become purified from that, which I hear many confirmations of this. The purpose of this yatra is to inspire us to dedicate our lives and soul with a selfless service attitude to serving Srila Prabhupada and his mission. Because he has given us his life. And his life's contribution to the parampara was the society he created. If we are not grateful to him for saving us, will Krishna be pleased with us? However knowledgeable we may become in various high topics, will Krishna be pleased with us if we are not grateful to his pure servant who sacrificed his life to take us out of the ignorance of Kali? And give us the path of perfection. So let us pray here with very sincere hearts that through this wonderful yatra we have participated in over the last 16, how many days? 15 days. That we may pray that this wonderful yatra we have participated in for the last 15 days will bring us a much deeper sense of dedication. Humility to to really do whatever we possibly can to assist Prabhupada in his mission of pure compassion. And following his teachings to humbly serve the Vaishnavas, to help give his compassion to the suffering conditioned souls by reading his books, by speaking from his books, by distributing his books. By helping in what other way? And ultimately we should pray that we can sincerely, wholeheartedly understand the importance of chanting the holy names and making it the first priority of our lives. The more love we have, the more love we can give. That love comes when we gratefully serve those who has given us so much. And we can really reciprocate with Srila Prabhupada by taking shelter of the holy name, because that is the ultimate gift that he has given us. Prabhupada wanted us to remain united, to cooperate with each other in spreading the glories of the chanting of the holy name. I wish to thank all of you very much for your outstanding service to the Vaishnav community during Srila Prabhupada's disappearance festival. It was a feast for my heart to see all of you serving so nicely. What a great benediction that was. To have the opportunity to perform the sacred service of giving prasad to Srila Prabhupada's followers from all over the world in honor of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance festival. I think some causeless mercy has descended upon us. I think because all of you are so very, very sincere in your efforts, Srila Prabhupada has rewarded you by giving you the chance to serve his devotees. We must be convinced, not only theoretically, but practically, that happiness is never in acquiring the illusory mirages of this world. Real happiness can only come through service, through giving. Thakur Bhaktivinoda said, "The sufferings and miseries I endure in my service to Krishna are the source of my greatest joy." Getting prestige, popularity, followers, getting money, beautiful family, nice home, good health. These things give a very temporary, superficial, external sense of happiness or pleasure. But in service, even if none of those things we just stated are there, in service, we gain actual inner satisfaction. Let me ask, were you happy in seeing how blissful all the devotees were getting served prasad? Who do you think was getting more inner joy? Those being served and eating, or those fasting for so long and rendering service? Huh? Would you have been happier sitting there eating? This is Prabhupada's mercy. This is really Srila Prabhupada and Sri Radharani's mercy, that we can understand this principle practically, that our real happiness is in sacrifice of service. And the more that service is unconditional and selfless, the more it is a service of love, of pure love. It is that pure love for Krishna that every soul is longing for, and nothing can replace it. We must long for that love. But we have no qualification. We're so far away from that standard of unconditional love. But if we serve sincerely, with humility, and we're desperately, desperately, desperately trying to chant the holy names properly, then Krishna will see our efforts. Like that little sparrow trying to dry up the ocean. When Krishna sees we're sincere and determined with the right purpose, he will bestow that love upon us through the mercy of Guru and the Vaishnavas. Actually, your service to the devotees during Prabhupada's festival will perhaps give faith and happiness to people all over the world, even those who are thousands of miles away when they hear about it. It is preaching. If we become proud, we have served nicely, then that pride neutralizes the effects of the great benediction we received. But if we feel ourselves unqualified, but grateful, grateful for the causeless mercy that I was allowed to serve amongst other Vaishnavas. Ah. Soon, Krishna will bestow the prime benediction of pure love within our hearts. So I know all of you work very hard to do this, and on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and on behalf of all the leaders of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and all the devotees who have given their lives. I very gratefully thank all of you very much. Let this be a lesson of what is of real value to the heart. I'd like to also thank all of you for your incredible enthusiasm throughout this festival. Many of you have gotten sick physically, and of course, many thorns in your feet, much dust in your lungs. But still, I didn't hear anyone complaining. Everyone is just trying to get purified and trying to help all the other devotees be happy in Vrindavan. And especially thank you for tolerating me. I honestly and sincerely do not know how you do it or why you do it, but you do it. And that is some special magic of Srila Prabhupada. If you can somehow or other see his eternally resplendent divine mercy through a little piece of garbage on the road like me, that is his inconceivable power. So I thank all of you very, very much. And pray that when you return to your homes, you bring the real spirit of Vrindavan, selfless service, and the longing for complete attachment to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. And complete determination to glorify them by hearing and chanting their holy names. And this yatra, we had many wonderful souls come and join us, speak to us. Amongst them, the shining jewel of all Brajbasis has come to be with us today. Dinabandhu Prabhu. What would be Vrindavan Yatra without Dinabandhu Prabhu? His spontaneous devotion and his enthusiasm to preach the glories of Vrindavan Dham through his incredible knowledge and realization is always a profound inspiration for us. At the same time, you know, he's very much involved in performing great sacrifices in Prabhupada's service to make the Vrindavan temple what Prabhupada wants it to be. So my gratitude to you, Dinabandhu Prabhu. I learned so much from him. I hope you are all happy. happy than my insignificant life has served some noble purpose. I am grateful that you have given me that. Srila Prabhupada ki.